Hey guys, I'm Eric McLean.
And I'm Kelly Gramlich. It's time to talk some ACC sports.
Let's go! Happy Wednesday, everyone. Thank you for joining us on today's episode. I've got to say, Kelly, I am so excited about this episode today. It's going to be a little bit different than normal. Our normal Wednesday guest interview. In fact, we're going to really change things up. Guys, welcome in to the Homer Pod.
In case you guys didn't already know, Mac and I went to Clemson. So to fairly discuss the most anticipated ACC championship game ever, we invited a couple of our Notre Dame friends, Jessica Smetana and Jordan Cornett, to join us on this episode.
Basically, Kelly and I are going to tell you guys why Clemson is going to win the game, obvious choice. And Jess and Jordan, they're going to tell you why Notre Dame's going to win. It's going to be a lot of fun. How about a quick introduction, though, and then let's get right to it. I'll start with Jordan Cornett. He is the all-time leading shot blocker at Notre Dame. He tells me that every time I see him, so I have to mention that. And he's also the host of the best football show on TV, The Huddle, on ACC Network. Quite the glow up, honestly, go from Notre Dame to The Huddle, hang out with me and EJ and Coach Rick. But honestly, you guys can catch him anywhere on ESPN, on radio, on TV. JC really does it all. He works harder than anybody in the business.
Jessica Smetana is also a Notre Dame graduate and currently works for Sports Illustrated. Jess produces features for SI and hosts interviews with coaches, athletes, and celebrities. In her spare time, she somehow finds time to write articles for SI as well.
Guys, this is going to be a fun one. Kelly, how you feeling? Because it is time. Let's get to the Homercast. All right, guys, you heard the intro. We finally got them here. It's the Homer Podcast. So before we jump onto the field, I want to know everybody's opinion, and you have to be honest with me that we're all friends here. Should Notre Dame join the ACC permanently?
No.
What? Come on.
No. Being independent is what it's all about when you're a Notre Dame fan. This has been a fun season. Don't get me wrong. Notre Dame fans have thoroughly enjoyed watching Notre Dame wipe the field with the ACC opponents this season, minus, you know, Clemson obviously being the only close game. But no, Notre Dame staying independent. We love our games against USC and Stanford and, you know, all of the fun guys we get to play when we have our normal schedule.
Yeah, I mean, Jess's dismissal of this whole thing kind of speaks to what Notre Dame fans across the country feel. Like, it's been a cute study abroad year. We got to see Italy. We got to see these other continents out there. But we're returning home, and that's to America. And that's what the fan base is and the interest. This ain't no regional brand. This is Notre Dame. Notre Dame is a national brand. And Jess can speak to this. I don't fit in this category. But very successful, wealthy boosters that Jess speaks for here, they thoroughly enjoy the opportunity to see their team play across the country. And you want to keep those boosters happy. So you know what those boosters do? Give a lot of money to the university. So keep Jess and the rest very happy. Keep us independent. So it's most likely is what's going to happen.
So, okay. So you guys would trade, you know, battling a top five Clemson every year for a lackluster USC, a trash Stanford, like that's cool for y'all?
There's always a top 10 team in there somewhere, whether it's USC or Michigan or Michigan State or whoever it is. Like, the competition has been pretty balanced and good. Even if you get a year where USC is garbage, like, you'll have a miraculously successful Stanford team to play against. So it kind of has worked out, and I think Notre Dame fans like that.
All right, JC, what would it take, man? Is it more money? What do we have to do? Guaranteeing you championships? I mean, come on.
I'll tell you, at the beginning of the season, there didn't feel like much of a path to Notre Dame joining this conference. It just wasn't there was no circumstance where I could be thrown in on radio calls to say, yeah, that's how it happens for Notre Dame, outside of just complete turmoil and chaos surrounding the college landscape where they're forced because of the world and scheduling to do it again. That's changed a little bit. Jim Phillips becoming the new commissioner for the ACC, although his relationship and tie was to Dr. Kevin White, who's now at Duke. Him and Jack Swarbrick, I don't know what kind of relationship is there. I do know, just like he was at Northwestern, Jim Phillips is beloved at Notre Dame. That does get it one step closer. These are two sides in the ACC and ESPN that I'm sure want to kind of tweak the deal. I won't say which side is more interested in that, But Jim Phillips getting Notre Dame in gets that closer. So there is a desire from Jim. Jim's also been on a record saying what me and Jess have also said here early on is, man, that just really isn't what the reality is for Notre Dame. So now that he's wearing this hat, it'll be different. I'll just speak for Jess when I say, must have been pretty nice for y'all to be on NBC and generate those numbers like you did by linking up with Notre Dame. You're welcome for that.
Thank you so much.
I think it was kind of a mutual relationship there. The numbers are pretty high. Okay. Last one on this topic, because we're going to get to the game, but, and either of you can answer this. You say, you know, what would it take, right? What if Notre Dame gets in the playoff this year with one loss? Because I'm not sure Notre Dame's ever going to do that without a conference championship, without an undefeated schedule in an independent state.
That's a great point.
I disagree.
If roles are reversed and y'all lose to Clemson in November, you're done. You're out. Texas A&M's going to be in. Come on.
Maybe this year, but in 2015, this exact thing almost happened. Notre Dame lost to Clemson on October 4th, 2015, and then ended up in a position to make the playoff, ended up losing the last game of the season on a last-second field goal to Stanford, and that is what kept them out of the playoff, not the loss to Clemson. If you lose, and same, you could say the same thing about Notre Dame's schedule last year, losing to Georgia at Georgia, they were still in the playoff hunt late in the season until they gave up that awful game to Michigan that I don't even want to talk about. So I think a one-loss Notre Dame team can make it. It depends, obviously, what the rest of the field does, but it's not out of the question. They're definitely better off running the table like in 2018, but it's not out of the question.
I'll tell you, if the football game goes down like this podcast so far with all these body slams that me and Jess are throwing at you guys, I feel really good about Saturday, because I'll do you one better with Jess there. And is if there was no conference that the Irish were playing in here, keep in mind, they'd be undefeated and would have no test in front of them to worry about. We got to face Clemson now twice. You think that's appealing to anybody in this universe, let alone Brian Kelly? So this game was on the schedule if Notre Dame was independent. Notre Dame wins that game. Notre Dame then would have probably had Wake Forest or not, and then they'd be marching on into the CFP. So it's almost a deterrent, you can look at it in that regard as well. All that to say this, I'm an ACC Network football host, and I would love Notre Dame to join the conference.
That's right. And again, when you look at that, I've heard so many people saying that, you know, that Clemson was on the schedule already and we would still be doing this. Well, let's not forget that nobody is allowed to play outside of their conference. So Notre Dame wouldn't have had Clemson. You wouldn't have had this great ACC schedule. So I hear what you're saying. It is interesting to look at the fact that what could have been if there was no conference championship, and the fact that if it was a normal year, y'all would be in. And then there's no question about it. Right now, you'd probably be solidified at two. But just in the COVID era, you know, it's hard to imagine what Notre Dame's schedule would have looked like if the ACC didn't say, come here, little stray dog. We'll take you in.
UMass, Army.
Yeah, UMass and Army. That'd be solid.
BYU.
Maybe BYU.
Notre Dame is not a stray dog. If anything, it's like a pedigree.
Oh, I thought I snuck that in there. You guys heard me say that?
It's like a pedigree French bulldog that got away
okay,
from home
okay.
or something.
I'll agree to that.
It's not a stray dog.
Y'all got your papers. I understand.
Yeah, Matt, the stray dog, I wasn't with you on that one. I was like, he's going to get burnt for that.
Well, hey, let's move to the field. And because this matchup, it is so interesting. And actually, before we dive into any positions, Jordan, because you're a degenerate and you love to gamble, you love to spend a bunch of money, I want to ask you how you feel about this. ESPN's FBI, 71% chance that Clemson wins. The line right now is like 10.5, double-digit favorite. Are you kidding me? To one of the most complete, if not the most complete team in the country. How do you feel about it? Is it justified? What do you think? And why is it a 10.5 point spread?
Well, I'm betting my house on Notre Dame to cover this one. And if you gave me the rights,
take your headphones out and let Shea hear that. Take them out right now.
I'd bet your house, EMAC, if you let me too. I look at all this, and I guess my first question in that number is, okay, that's clear disrespect to Notre Dame going back to no disrespect to me and Justice, all of our mutual friend here, Gojo in 2012, that loss versus Alabama. But that's clearly playing a role is 2012. 2018 clearly playing a role thanks to Kelly and EMAC's alma mater. Clemson 38-3 in that semifinal game. I get all that. But are you telling me that James Kalski's healthy? Does Vegas know that for certain? I don't even think y'all know that right. for certain, right? So that's one thing. Tyler Davis has come back. That's fair. But you still know what this Notre Dame offensive line is like, right? And Tommy Kramer does come back at the tackle position for them. So, yeah, they're just missing their center. But the backup center looked more than serviceable. it's an O-line U there. And how Notre Dame wants to play a game offensively, control the clock, establish the run defensively, put the opposition in predictable third down and distance situations where they can become one of the top five third down defenses in the country. All those things remain the same. To me, the biggest question mark that reared its ugly head in Notre Dame's first win was the appearance of James Skalski. He wasn't there. That hurt them more than Trevor Lawrence. That question still hasn't been answered. So bet the house on the Irish.
Look, JC, I'm with you on that. I think the number is absurd. And it reminds me a little bit of before Clemson got that respect. Clemson was always a huge dog to Oklahoma and Ohio State and all these semifinals, and it just looked ridiculous. Jess, do you feel, look, it's Notre Dame. Like, it's weird for Notre Dame to play the disrespect card, but I understand it.
Like, this is what everyone looking at Clemson has felt like for the years.
Yeah, yeah. Like, we understand. We felt that for a long time.
These are Dabo fans saying this, Jess.
Okay. So I have like a truth bomb to drop on the podcast right now that I'm not sure if you guys are aware of. I went to Clemson my freshman year of college.
Mac,
we were
told
waiting
me
on it. I was waiting on
so
it.
So
I secretly inserted a spy on your team, JC. We've got three Tigers on the
yes
podcast.
No,
she left
no.
Clemson. Left Clemson.
I did leave Clemson. I love Clemson, but I was there after the Orange Bowl loss to West Virginia, and I was there in the height of Clemsoning. Everyone hates Clemson. I hated Clemsoning. I totally understand Clemson fans playing the disrespect card. I think probably should have lost that card a couple years ago after Deshaun Watson won a national championship there. But to answer your question, Kelly, I think Notre Dame fans have kind of been playing the disrespect card since at least, I want to say 2015, 2016, not 2016. They were terrible in 2016, but kind of these like this has not been a thing that, you know, Notre Dame fans aren't used to in these big games. And to be fair to, you know, everyone else, Notre Dame hasn't won any of these big games minus this year against Clemson. So it's a little fair that, you know, the spread is kind of big, but I don't know if this team's different. I guess we'll find out, but like they won the game this year. So you think it should kind of earn them a little bit of respect, but
yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah, I was shocked to see the number, quite frankly. More shocked to see the 71% with FPI. But again, we have to play this game. JC got into a little bit. Let's move on to the field. Jordan, Ian Book, I mean, he's a field general. I think he's earned that. He's earned our respect the way that he's played this game. They you know, faced off in South Bend. Trevor Lawrence wasn't there. Now, do you think with Ian wanting to diminish that asterisk, and all the talk is, well, Trevor wasn't there. And you just mentioned how that wasn't even really the biggest deal. How can Ian Book now win the football game for the Irish on Saturday?
I think so much of it is about, you know, the quarterback position, man. You spent your 4 years, you spent your football life at points protecting him, whether it was a tight end or whether being an offensive lineman that you became and left Clemson as the all-time winningest player.
Come on,
when you
man
did. Let's go, Mr.
Suck
Clemson
up.
Yeah, let's go. I'm a guest in this house.
That's right.
Pay my dues. Little hat
gas
tip.
Him up. Gas him
yeah,
up.
Yeah, I got to. To me, it's so much about a mental position. And for Ian Book was fighting the opposition, but fighting his own fan base. I mean, Jess, we got to be real. We questioned this guy plenty of times in the last couple of years.
I never questioned Ian Book. Well, I have been a loyal Ian Book. I'm one of the few who
one
was
of
like,
the one.
You know what? He's not.
Even during the first Clemson loss?
I was like, he's not perfect. Even after the first Clemson loss, I was like, he's not perfect. But look around college football. He's up there with one of the guys you want playing quarterback for your team.
And that's proof in the pudding with his win-loss record. I know some people don't respect that stat when it comes to quarterbacks, but to me, it speaks a lot. I don't care, especially in college football. And I was close to that, Jess. These guys will tell you, I said preseason, this guy, if he can play like he's supposed to consistently, he'll be in the discussion for Heisman. He's kind of on the outside looking in, but we weren't too far off in that projection with Ian Book. To me, though, it got to a point where there weren't enough Jesses out there that believed in him, believed in Ian Book, and Ian Book was out there really fighting against his own group to say, I can do this. I'm not the liability. I'm not the thing holding us back. To do that on what, November 1st was it, I think, against Clemson? To do that
7th.
On November 7th, excuse me. How can we forget that day? A day that'll live in infamy for KG and EMAC. For him to get over that hump, for him to be the reason why, along with the defense, they won that game, along with Kyron Williams, for him to show that, he hasn't skipped a beat since. The guy's been playing so free out there And in talking with guys in EMAC, you know, I had this conversation with Justin Tuck, a former Notre Dame legend. That plays a role. Once you believe that you can do it, once you've seen that you have done it, Ian Book's not facing Trevor Lawrence. He's facing Clemson's defense. And he was able to do that out there once. So tell me why that young man can't do it again.
And that's the biggest thing to me is early in the season, really every game before that Clemson game, he was so hesitant. And I don't want to say he was afraid, but it looked like he was afraid to throw the deep ball, to take shots, to be that guy that now he is and developed into right before our eyes. And so it's been really impressive to see him. His escapability is what makes him so dangerous. I mean, you think you got this guy tackled, Jess, and then he's gone.
Yeah, and I think another thing is that the entire offense as a whole has improved throughout the season, and a lot of the wide receivers that were a big question mark in the first half of the season have kind of made a name for themselves in the second half, like Javon McKinley, for example. But I think what will give Notre Dame the edge in this game is if Ian Book can find a balanced attack like he did in the first matchup against Clemson. Ian Book finished with 310 passing yards and 67 rushing yards. And I think the Notre Dame total rushing offense was like around 150 yards. So he was a good chunk of that. And part of his game is this, Brian Kelly calls it the pass run option, which is he will make his, you know, reads downfield and then a run is built into the play. So he'll take off. And if he doesn't like what he sees, you know, and say Clemson's playing man and everyone's got their back to him, he'll run down the field and he'll, you know, score a first down, score a touchdown and keep the Irish on the field. So that's kind of his bread and butter. And Notre Dame's offense has gotten a lot better at executing those type plays.
I agree. And Mac, let's talk about Trevor Lawrence for a second. I know you've heard
Thank
of him.
You,
guys, I know you've heard of
Sheesh.
Him. He's got long, luscious locks. And
I thought you were going to say legs for a second. I was like, whoa.
Well, hey, I mean, he's down. A tall man. But with Trevor, look, and you talk about Ian Book and the pass run option, which is what you're calling it. And, you know, with Clemson, I think that's the biggest difference. Look, DJ Uiagalelei was excellent versus Notre Dame. That's what makes this game so odd. And again, why I think the spread being so high is weird, because DJ went out there and just put on a show. But to me, the difference is, you know, there's a lot of different things you get with Trevor Lawrence. You get the mental side, you get the experience, you get the leadership. But weirdly enough, with a guy who's such a great passer, you get the running part of it with Trevor Lawrence. And DJ is just really not there yet in terms of reading defenses and checking out of plays and things like that. But he also was injured. And that's something that we're hearing, is that he had a nagging shoulder injury. And it gets tougher when you get to QB2. It's like, okay, are we running this guy? Because QB3
right,
has a broken
right.
thumb. Like, what are we going right. to do? So
walk-ons up next.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
To me, Mac, I think the RPO with Trevor, the way he's able to read the defense, will free some things up for ETN. So it's not like Trevor's going to go out there and pass for more yards than DJ. DJ had, what, 460 something? It was crazy.
Just the most yards ever against Notre Dame. No big deal.
Where's Kyle Hamilton? Kyle Hamilton.
He's going to be out there. Don't worry. Okay. He'll be out there.
He'll be out there now. Okay, but he'll be right. out there now. But both of them are going to be playing on Sundays. Let's keep it all the way.
We'll talk about Kyle Hamilton a little more in the second. I think the best safety in the country. But when you look at Trevor, there's a couple of different things with this, right? And you know, I think the most important is his ability in the zone read. You know, when they first played, Clemson went up to Notre Dame. They ran the zone read twice. That is their bread and butter. That is a play that in my time, we would run maybe close to 50% of our runs was zone read. They ran it twice. That is now going to open up so many different things, because you have to respect it. You have to respect Trevor's legs. He's such a better athlete. He's faster than he looks. He's more athletic than he looks. I think that in itself is going to open up the offense so much more than what we saw. Clemson was almost forced to throw it and throw it continually down the field. I think that's going to open up. It's going to alleviate some of that stress on Travis Etienne, which, my goodness, Notre Dame did an unbelievable job shutting him down 1 yard per rush. Such a special player. But now you can't do that, because if you do, Trevor's going to kill you. It's going to look like Ohio State a year ago in the playoffs. So I think that that's one of the biggest things. The second, just experience, him being in these moments, him being in these big games, not being rattled, which DJ looked great until it mattered most. And it's double overtime and he's taking sacks and losing field position, losing yardage. So I think those two things are really, when you say Trevor Lawrence is going to make a difference, you have to say why. Because people just say that it's not just his arm talent. It's not just his normal ability. it's got to be all those other things.
Rebuttal from the Golden Domers?
Yeah, keep in mind, Ian Book has that experience too. I mean, you're talking about a quarterback who's played in these big games. And to me, I look at it and say, okay, like, what's Ian Book going to bring? Because he's going to be a cool customer here too. How's Clemson going to activate Travis Etienne like you were talking about? Okay, if Trevor Lawrence brings that, that's great. But against third downs, you guys failed in 11 of 15 opportunities on third down to convert. You want to know why you did that? Because Notre Dame is third in the nation in third down defense. They put you in those positions, Clark Lee does in that defense, to make it difficult. We also left points on the field in the red zone in that game, something that still lingered with the Irish that needs to be cleaned up. I've seen this Irish team turn the ball over more in these last few games than they did in the whole beginning of the season. But to me, it's a Notre Dame defense built no matter who's at quarterback to stop Travis Etienne. Still great to be there on third downs. And an offense that's way more confident now than it was before with a quarterback who's playing these games. So, Jess, you tell me what I'm missing, but I feel like we are all the way good in this matchup.
I'll tell you one thing you're forgetting, which is that, yes, Clemson's getting Trevor Lawrence back, but Clemson's big question mark is still their offensive line. And that's one thing that Dabo Swinney has said, that Notre Dame beat Clemson in the trenches on both sides of the ball in the last matchup. And it's not like Clemson's O-line has gotten any better since November 7th. So I think that's also a big question mark for Clemson. And obviously Trevor Lawrence is like a generational talent and is going to change the game no matter, you know, what happens on Saturday. His presence alone is a pretty big boost to Clemson's offense. But I think Notre Dame's defense is a really, really good matchup for that.
Mac, can you go play O-line? Because you might need you out there.
I might could play a snap. I don't know about a whole game against those monsters.
JC, also, we can talk turnovers. I'm thinking this time Etienne's not just going to hand the ball to Owosu-Koramoah. Like, I'm just hoping.
I don't know. He might, that. You know, to make it interesting.
He's been doing it for a while during the season.
He actually has, though. The amount of scoop and scores that Clemson fans have had to endure this season is ridiculous. Oh, man. If I get another one, I'm going to lose it. I'm going to lose it.
But I think that's what adds the level of intrigue to this one. KG, and I think we all four on this podcast are aware of this, these teams get to pause for two whole weeks to tighten up in every way possible. So some of that lack of attention to detail, of course, the sense of urgency is going to be there. But you're going to get an opus from Clemson. You're going to get a similar opus from Notre Dame. I mean, these two teams have built up to this moment for months on end, and now a two-week runway to be ready for each other. I think we're going to see the best football we've seen yet coming off the heels of that Monday Night Football just ridiculousness.
That's right.
That was
Come
incredible
on.
With the Ravens and Browns. Sorry, Jess. I know you're an AFC North Pittsburgh Steelers fan.
No, I was rooting Steelers. For the Ravens. I was rooting for the Ravens in that one.
Yeah. So I just think we're going to have such a great game.
Who do you think is going to be the player that runs into the locker room to go to the bathroom midway through the game in the ACC championship game is what I'm asking.
Exactly. We have no clue. But, you know, Jess, you were talking about this Notre Dame offense. I want to hit them as a whole. Because I think these offenses, when you compare them, are very different. You know, you look at Notre Dame, very retro, very old school, big, nasty offensive line. They want to control the game with tempo, slowing it down, speeding it up whenever they want. Kyren Williams, I mean, he is developing into a superstar right before our eyes, really going to be pushing for a first-team All-AC spot. If not this year, for sure next year when you guys join the conference again. And then a quarterback who's super sneaky. So is there a piece of this offense, Jess, that has maybe impressed you the most? I mean, you've had an up-close and personal view of this team.
Yeah, I think Kyren Williams, like you said, has been very impressive and a little bit of a surprise to Notre Dame fans. I think going into the season, a lot of people were wondering what kind of player he would be. And we're a little bit, you know, like Chris Tyree was the splashy five-star recruit. So everyone kind of had their eyes on that as like the big, you know, ooh, like we got this freshman.
Shiny new toy. He's five-star.
Right. Right, exactly. He's the shiny new toy in the offense. But Kyren Williams has been great. And even better than his running ability is his ability to pick up the blitz and keep the pocket clean for Ian Book, which is obviously a huge part of his game. The O-line has been excellent. The O-line at Notre Dame, though, is always pretty good, so that's not a huge surprise to me. I think they're going to be pretty banged up this weekend. Hopefully, Tommy Kramer is full, you know, 100%. I really don't know what to expect from someone coming off of a appendectomy surgery. That's not something that happens in a usual year, but this year is very unusual. And this Notre Dame center, Jarrett Patterson, also is out this weekend. So I think that there's a lot of impressive players on this offense. I think Kyren Williams is probably the most surprising, but I'll also say the tight end group as a whole
been Come on.
Awesome to watch this season.
Those dudes are nasty. Nasty.
Yes. Michael Mayer is a beast, and Notre Dame, if you want to call Clemson wide receiver U, I think Notre Dame should be tight end U, because they have had some high up draft picks in the first and second rounds of the draft with their tight end talent the last 10 years.
And you look, Michael Mayer, number one tight end in the class last year. This year, they get another number one tight. I mean, it makes no sense how these guys just roll in there. JC, is there a particular part of this offense that has stood out to you, more than not?
Yeah, I mean, you'd have to start, because I always lead with talking about Notre Dame with their speed and how they have more speed this year than they've had. And that's on both sides of the ball. You're asking about offense. So naturally, I'd follow suit with Jess and say Kyren Williams has to be the headliner. I mean, you asked me a question earlier this week, who's my favorite Notre Dame player in the history of the program? I didn't grow up a Notre Dame fan. I grew up a Michigan fan. I grew up in Notre Dame City. Yeah.
What?
Since we're sharing truths here, it was a Fab Five influence. I mean, I was
that makes sense.
So that's how I got to that point. But then I went to Notre Dame's campus, fell in love with Notre Dame, and here we are. I am homering this thing all the way home with Jess.
That's right.
So to see Kyren Williams become arguably my favorite Notre Dame football player in this short amount of time ever speaks to the impact that he's having and what he can be. He is that kind of talent that you land in your program and becomes a centerpiece. He's proven to be that behind that offensive line. He's our Ezekiel Elliott. When the Cowboys were humming,
okay.
He's our Ezekiel Elliott to a Notre Dame offense that leads with an offensive line. Cowboys' success in every facet of the game starts with their offensive line. Same with Notre Dame. So that part for certain, but I love that we're throwing the ball up to Shaquille O'Neal, Hakeem Olajuwon, and Sean Bradley. I mean, our guys are all massive. Like,
monsters.
These guys are windmill hoofing
it on
basketball court. I love KG. KG, this
these
is us. This is basketball.
Players.
I love it. I love watching these big targets. We have designed our team in such a unique way that has a personality that does differ from every other team in the country. We're big on the outside. We are bruising in the trenches. And now we have speed. That's why we're undefeated, and that's why you guys are 0-1 against us.
Wow. I was going to say, I feel like Notre Dame's wide receiver group this year averages out at like 6'5", 6'6". If you include the tight ends, too, it's massive. It's the biggest I've ever seen. It's quite something to behold.
Yeah. I agree. Mac, let's talk about this Clemson offense for a second here. Because
bring it on back. This is a little overwhelmingly Notre Dame.
Let's bring
it
back.
Get some more Tiger
in
here.
You guys are the hosts.
Yeah, that's
You're
true. That's actually a very good point.
You just like talking about Notre Dame.
But Mac, okay. You know, it's cute to be tied in you and all these positions. I don't want
Miami says hello, by the
true,
way.
True, true. But wide receiver you. Okay, so this is a year you don't have Justin Ross, who, of course, Clemson should have really at this moment.
Or do you?
Or
no.
Do you?
Fowler was saying that. I was like, dude,
we don't know.
No, that's actually not true. I was really surprised he said that on TV. And then Dabo was like, no, he's not coming back. He still hasn't been cleared by any means. He might be back next year. We'll see. But you don't have Justin Ross and Frank Ladson, Joseph Ngata, these five stars, they've been hurt. What's really surprised me, if we're just talking about surprises from the offense, Cornell Powell, this guy, look, there have been so many fifth-year guys at Clemson, and we talk about this on the radio all the time. We say, this is this guy's year, and it never is. Sherron Peake, who we love, he was a good player, but he didn't break out. Trevion Thompson, DeAndre Overton, these guys that were former five-stars that you're just kind of waiting on. But Cornell Powell has blown me away, Mac, and him combined with Amari Rodgers, if there is a weakness, it feels like you don't have that Renfro piece. And JC, when you were talking about third down, you said, you know, what was the problem? In my mind, I'm thinking Hunter Renfro had to graduate. Like that was the problem.
Yeah.
But Mac, they have been using ETN a lot in the receiving game too. And that's something, even when ETN hasn't run the ball well, which of course was true against Notre Dame, he's had 100 receiving yards like he did in some of these other games. So what does Clemson have to do, Mac, to get ETN a little more involved in the receiving game? Because I think that's going to be important Saturday.
Yeah, you know, I think so too. And I want to touch on Cornell really quickly before I dive into that. I'd love to see a guy who works his entire career off and waits his turn and just doesn't give up. And, you know, because I can relate to that. And, you know, I was a guy highly recruited, four-star tight end, you know, top five tight end in the country. And then I changed positions. And then, you know, it took me so long just to get on the field for, you know, whatever reason, whether it's coaches, you don't get the plays, you're not ready, whatever you feel like the reason is. But the fact that he stayed and the fact that, you know, he is having the year that he is having, it's just cool to see. And to be able to relate to that in a guy who, I mean, is seriously balling out. I mean, he's getting Senior Bowl looks. He's getting Shrine Bowl looks, all these things that before this season, none of us even thought that would be even close to possible. So seeing him step up, he had obviously a huge game against Notre Dame.
That's not how this works. The sentimental story that everybody rallies around. Clemson's really trying to steal that from Notre Dame. Like, Rudy hasn't been this thing. Y'all are trying with safety
Ray
on
Ray.
Disney Plus.
We're Ray Ray.
Come on.
Ray Ray, McElrath Bay, and now this Cornell Powell stuff. You better go somewhere, bro. We've monopolized those stories.
That's right.
Rudy is our.
JC, I hate to tell you this, but like the kids don't know Rudy. Like that's just so old. It's kind of reflective of the Notre Dame program.
Rudy was
like,
on
when's
Netflix.
The last time we won a natty, guys? Like what?
Jess,
in a minute.
Jess, it's time for us to go. They're getting disrespectful.
I gotta go.
They're getting disrespectful.
Ray Ray's the new Rudy. Ray Ray's the new Rudy. I mean, he's here.
I love it. But again, looking at this offense, Travis Etienne obviously has to get going. A guy that is so dynamic. At one time, I think he still might be the only player, not just running back, in the country with 750 rushing yards, over 500 receiving yards. He's that dynamic. They had, you know, kind of like a mini media day on Tuesday, if you will. And Travis got to speak to the media and said, look, the decision that I made to come back to Clemson, I am so happy that I did that. I've gotten so much better as a complete player. I've developed so much better and I'm basically so much more attractive to the NFL now. And so I think that was the big piece on why he made that decision. But now in the biggest stage with the brightest lights, he's got to prove that. And he has to step up. I talked about earlier, Trevor Lawrence eliminating some of that pressure because of how good he is. But Travis is certainly going to have to step up.
It's going to be huge.
I mean, my whole thing is like, y'all just saw what North Carolina's running backs, Michael Carter and Javonte Williams, did versus Miami, mm-hmm. right?
That's right.
They're still piling up yards. They just got
they just scored again.
Another touchdown. What do those dudes do against Notre Dame? Nothing. It's not Trevor Lawrence coming back and Travis Etienne becomes this. That's what this Notre Dame defense does. They make your offense play left-handed. And they're going to make you beat him in other ways than your strength. That's the Notre Dame defense effect. That's why Clark Lee is doing the worst thing possible in my mind, going to take a job at Vanderbilt. But I won't digress too far down there. And that better not affect this defense and how they prepare mentally for this one. It might. But to me, that's the story. That is the story. When I watch North Carolina and their ability to run all over Miami with pros on that defense, I came back. I said, I know A – plus B doesn't always necessarily equal C, but it just shows to me again, these are stars. And Notre Dame is taking stars out of games. And I expect them to do the same thing because they've already laid out that blueprint. Whether it was DJ, whether it's Trevor Lawrence, they are going to cut the head off the snake of Etienne and say, fine, go get, again, only 33 points in regulation before that number became more robust. Go do that again. I trust our offense. We can match that. We can surpass that. So I feel good on that front.
I agree. I know Notre Dame's defense can stop Etienne and can stop the run. And I'm not worried about Etienne getting, you know, 5 or 6 yard gains in the slot. That doesn't worry me. What worries me is Trevor Lawrence throwing bombs to Cornell Powell all day and not getting these chunk plays that Notre Dame isn't able to defend. And that is kind of maybe some trauma from the Cotton Bowl in 2018 that I need to work through with a therapist. But I think that's like where the legitimate fear is if you're Notre Dame. The defense is, as a unit, really strong. If there is a weak spot, it's the secondary. I don't think it's weak in terms of like the college football like picture, but just like if something's strong, something else has to be weaker. So I don't know. I think Kyle Hamilton being... hopefully not getting ejected in this game is also going to make a difference. And
keep your head up.
And
keep
kind
of up.
Meet. Right. But yeah, that's what I'm worried about as a Notre Dame fan is just these, you know, Clemson wide receivers with these 60 yard bombs getting thrown to them and running free for a touchdown.
You know, I just feel very comfortable me and Jess doing this now, taking over things that haven't previously been ours, because that's kind of what Notre Dame's done with the ACC. So I'm going to step into your guys' podcast here, and I want to ask you guys a question. What are you, Kelly and Emac? Kelly, you go first. What are y'all most afraid of with this Notre Dame team and in this rematch.
You know, it's interesting because I was just thinking about that. Jess was bringing up some PTSD from the Cotton Bowl. I think what worries Clemson fans the most is, yeah, that the Cotton Bowl was great, but like Justin Ross and T. Higgins were on the field. So there's a big difference, even though, look, Cornell's a great story. And Amari Rodgers, I think, has worked himself into being a draft pick. There's no doubt. He's had an incredible year. You don't have that guy that is a possession receiver that can just go up and get it. That is an NFL guy. And that's what Justin Ross was supposed to be for this team. And Frank Ladson, who's hurt. So my biggest concern for this game, by far, is the injury bug, whether that continues to strike before the game, whether it strikes mid-game like it did up in South Bend. I went back in the second overtime and wrote down the players on the field defensively for Clemson when Notre Dame was scored in the second overtime.
We didn't know who they were.
I hadn't heard of, like, legitimately.
We didn't know they were on the team.
All four of Dabo Sweeney's sons were on
the field.
Is that a nephew? Like, who is this guy? So
right.
That's the main concern for me. Just like, and that's something too that I've talked about a lot is over the past 5 years, whether you hate Clemson or love him, you have to admit, and as someone who does love Clemson, Clemson has been very fortunate when it comes to injuries. They have not really had significant injuries to the quarterback position, running back, wide receivers, D-line, all the D-line had stayed healthy.
This is me knocking on wood right now. But I'm banging this wood.
It seems like this year has been the worst injury year that I would say Dabo's ever had. And so that is my main concern. Mac?
Laying the excuses already. Setting this thing up.
All right.
Well, for me, yeah.
Go ahead.
Mine is, you know, PTSD from Connor Shaw, from all these running, Eric Dungy, from all these different running mobile quarterbacks that just for whatever reason, Clemson cannot contain. And it's going to be interesting enough. I think Mike Jones is going to be a huge kind of piece for this, kind of like Isaiah Simmons a year ago, where he's like, hey, look, your main goal on this play is just to watch Ian Book. And wherever he goes, you go. And Mike certainly has that ability and that quickness, aggressiveness and athleticism to be able to hang with a guy like Ian Book. But at the end of the day, Ian is so resilient and just he makes plays and he finds ways to make plays that honestly, JC, it's been keeping me up since November 7th. And, you know, I've just been thinking about this moment and here we are. We talked a little bit about defenses, guys. I want to transition there quickly and then we'll get one or two more questions and get out of here. Notre Dame's defense, we all are saying it's elite. It's one of the best in the country. And then I start pulling some stats. I start pulling some numbers. And Clemson is actually ranked a lot higher in a bunch of different categories. So lay it out for me, guys. What do you think this Notre Dame defense does best? And what do you think they can, again, continue to create problems? Talk to me about this defense.
I'll say, first of all, before we talk about Notre Dame's defense, you pulled some stats on Clemson's defense that I want to talk about. So you said that you put that they're number 8 in total defense, 302 yards per game. Notre Dame had 310 receiving yards alone and 208 rushing yards on November 7th.
That's because everybody was hurt. Good point.
You said they were number 2 in sacks. Sorry, I just got an email. It's from a store that I like to shop at. You said they were number 2 in sacks. They have 38 on the season. They sacked Ian Book twice, which is below the average. You put number 3 in tackles for loss with 93. So in the Notre Dame game, they had 8 tackles for loss, which is before the average for 10 games or below the average of 10 games. You have number 3 in interceptions with 13. Clemson's basically averaging an interception per game, and they had 0 against Notre Dame. Ian Book actually was on a streak with completions without an interception that just ended against Syracuse. So he's not very interception throwing prone to begin with, but 0 interceptions. You put number 5 in fumbles recovered with 9. So they're almost averaging 9 fumbles per game or 1 fumble per game. They had 1 fumble recovered that Ian Book fumbled, and then Clemson lost 3 fumbles, of course.
Oh, we know. Yeah.
You put number two in turnovers gained with 22. So see above what I just said. And then number 10 scoring defense, 18 points per game. Notre Dame scored 47 in 2 overtimes against Clemson. So
what it sounds like, Jess,
through that list, Emac.
Well, it sounds like it was an anomaly. Like it was the best game that Notre Dame could ever play, and they're not going to be able to do it again. That's what I just heard.
I think it sounds like the ACC competition is weak. So once again, you're welcome for Notre Dame joining this year because
Stanford.
There was actually someone to play against.
Michigan State.
Don't knock on the Pac-12 and Big Ten if you don't want to get in fights with all of their fan bases. Right. Trust me. I got That's in some right. fights with Ohio State fans last
Jess,
week.
Did it you see how I just not completely deflected judgments. The question? Like, I didn't address anything you said. That's my plan when you talk about the ACC competition. That's why y'all should join.
But my point is, I think Notre Dame and Clemson's defenses are both kind of statistical anomalies within the schedules that they played this season. So I think that it's a pretty good matchup. I don't think you can argue that, you can't make an argument that Venables and Clarkley aren't the two best defensive coordinators right now in college football. And that's why Clarkley is getting this promotion and going off to Vandy, although some would consider that a demotion, because why would you not want to coach at Notre Dame?
Yeah, I might agree with you on that one.
But Notre Dame was able to do to Clemson's defense what no other offense has all season. And that's just the point I'm trying to make. And that includes, some ACC talent. I'm trying to, gas up the ACC now. It's not like they're playing against the Citadel every week, right? Like, Notre Dame is just that much better than the rest of the field. And I think that, goes to show how good both of these defenses are, but also just how much better, like, they're on a higher tier than the rest of the college football right now.
JC, hit me. Defense, what are we talking?
I mean, when I look at it, there's stars on every level of Notre Dame's defense. I mean, Dalen Hayes, his numbers aren't gaudy, but you know what he brings on that defensive line. Okay, so let's get to that next level. Jeremiah Owusu, Karamoa. I mean, that guy's an animal. He's going to be a guy that's going to be an impact player on Sundays. He's in the cut of the – I mean, you talk about Notre Dame linebackers. I mean, not all of them have gone on to be great pros. Jalen Smith, the jury's still out, but he's a heck of a player at the next level. Manti Te'o didn't quite work in the league, but we saw what he was. Guy was in the conversation for the Heisman. So
Harrison Smith.
There's those – Harrison Smith's still out there making plays for Minnesota. and you look at – then we get to our third level in Kyle Hamilton. Like, it's continuity with old guys that understand Clark Lee's system that go out there and make plays in different ways. But it all starts, much like Notre Dame's offense is predicated on winning the line of scrimmage and running the football. The defense, that quarterback, Jeremiah Owusu-Karamoah, has one thing in mind: stopping the run. Let's win up front right away. Let's put them in third and eights, third and long situations, and let's see what they can do. Statistically, they ain't doing it against us, even if it's Clemson and a five-star backup in DJ Uiagalelei. They threw for over 400 yards. They're going to play their kind of game. And in college basketball, when I analyze those games, I always pick the teams that say, we're not going your way. We're playing the game that we want to play. And Notre Dame and Brian Kelly, for the last four seasons, have done precisely that. And that's why they've done something that program has never done in the history of that program. Won more than 10 games in four consecutive years. You're talking about the history of Notre Dame football. That is going out there, having guys that get old, stay old, executing a game plan and doing it at the highest of levels. And now they just got to get over the threshold. Now they just got to win. They've won a big game-ish. Now you got to go win the big game, and it starts with that
defense. In the postseason. Now it's checking that box. And, I love what you brought up, JC, because it's such an interesting accomplishment. The fact that you guys have won 10 games in four seasons. I mean, that is awesome. Clemson is just going on their 10th straight year of winning 10-plus games. And so you look at that success and what it looks like. I mean, it is tremendous. And just I think it's almost shocking, though, the history of Notre Dame. You would think that would happen more. But no doubt what Coach Kelly is doing right now is very impressive. I'm going to touch on Clemson's defense really quickly. The fact that they're getting those three guys back, and we're assuming, right? Of course, there's probably still some lingering injuries there. Jamie Skalski, he is an extension of Coach Venables. The fact that he can tell any single person on the field where you're doing, what to line up in, the confidence of having him out there, it's very much so like a quarterback. It's very much so like having Trevor Lawrence on the offense, but for the defense. And again, we mentioned Mike Jones, his athletic ability, being able to match up with tight ends, but then yet still be able to track down a guy like Ian Book and athletically match his skill set. But I think the most interesting one is going to be up front in Tyler Davis. And the fact that Notre Dame...
Mac, you read my mind.
Yeah, the fact that Notre Dame's center is out. You're now switching this balance of power where it's Clemson's good on, Notre Dame's second best or third best, wherever he was on the depth chart. So I think that's going to be impactful. Overall, Notre Dame's offensive line is still really, really good. And I think one of the best in the country. If they don't win the Joe Moore Award, just throw that big trophy away. Come
Mac,
on.
Also, I agree, with the D-line, Xavier Thomas was out for the first half due to targeting. It's still kind of a question mark of like, can he show up at all? But he's a five-star. He's a guy that had a great freshman year a couple of years ago. Can he be a factor? Like, that's another issue, because Brzee and Murphy have been great, but they're also freshmen. I think they looked like freshmen a good bit against that O-line. But have they continued to grow up a little bit since then? And Mac, I want to ask this with the coaches, and then we've got kind of a fun question at the end too, but I'll just put this out here. Dabo greater than Brian Kelly. Like, that's where I am right now. I trust Dabo Swinney. He's got national titles. He's been better in these big games, in my opinion. Do either of you want to go to bat and defend your boy, Brian Kelly?
And just let me say this, JC, hold on. You're looking at best postseason win for Coach Kelly is the famous, world famous camping.
Oh yeah,
world
that was
bowl
a big one, Mac.
That's not true. That was a big one. That's not true.
Best one ever.
That is not true.
Okay, well, for one, don't try to steer me down a path of how I'm going to answer this question. I am a guest, and I want to be treated as such on this podcast here. I'll say this. Dabo Swinney gets a nod. It's about chips at the end of the day. You're going to pick a guy who's won chips and won multiple chips. I get that. This is not a slight on Dabo. But I will say this. And this is very intriguing. And Clemson Tiger Nation needs to own up to this if they take a long look in the mirror. We've got some real estate in the minds of Clemson Tiger fans. We've got some real estate in the mind of Dabo Swinney. Because you know what Clemson's used to every season? Them being the only sheriff in town. Them being the only team we talk about. Them being the coveted prize. That's not them this year. The team that everybody wants to talk about on ACC Network in college football right now is Notre Dame, because they're in this for the year. And what they have done.
Because Jordan Cornette's the host. That's the only reason.
for a whole season, they've, in a way, been second fiddle, most especially because they lost a game. That has to irk a guy who lives with a chip on his shoulder because of how he was raised,
so isn't that
how
good?
He came up.
I feel like that's a
good
thing
good
for Clemson.
It's a good thing, but let me just tell you this. Sometimes you can get so into a tizzy, that can hurt you.
That's
Dabo
right.
lives with the chip
no,
on his shoulder.
I agree.
And I think that this has really bothered him. Notre Dame has led the storylines in the A block a lot of times. And how he responds to that, don't let Notre Dame win this game. Me
That's
and Jess
right.
will take this podcast over.
JC, don't try to confuse us with your TV speak. Get the A block yeah. nonsense out of here. Jess, can you defend
All right,
Ryan
come on,
Kelly?
Jess, what we got?
What
come
do you feel
on.
About Brian
Dabo
Kelly?
Did say that he really wanted to win in Notre Dame Stadium, and you know he's not going to get another chance to do that for a while. So I agree. He's definitely has a chip on his shoulder coming to this weekend. But I'll defend Brian Kelly. I'm not going to say that Brian Kelly's a better coach than Dabo Swinney. I don't think that's true. And I've been honest this entire
We appreciate
that's
I'm
right.
not start,
we appreciate
yes.
that.
I'm not going to start lying
don't
to
lie
you right
us.
Now. However, I will say what Brian Kelly has done at Notre Dame deserves a ton of credit, because to be the head coach at Notre Dame, you can't just be a head coach. You have to be a CEO. You have to be a spokesperson. You have to be all of these things that no one that gets into coaching is really wants to do. And if you look at some of his successes, and I'm not just talking about winning games, which obviously is important and the reason that we're all here. Brian Kelly has put so many guys in the NFL. He's had over 45 players drafted in the NFL, and most of these guys are actually making an impact every Sunday. It's hard to turn on an NFL game without seeing at least one Notre Dame player on the field for at least one of the teams. And these are people like we mentioned, Harrison Smith, Jalen Smith, Mike McGlinchey, Quentin Nelson, Stephon Tuitt, Chase Claypool, Ronnie Stanley, Will Fuller. Like, these are stars. And to do that is really difficult. But I think what's even more impressive that Brian Kelly has done the last 5 and 6 years in particular is really upped his recruiting and really been able to sell Notre Dame as a premier destination. And obviously, like, it sounds ridiculous if you're an old school Notre Dame fan to have to like convince 18-year-olds that Notre Dame is a place to go to play college football. But like we've mentioned, Notre Dame hasn't won a national championship since 1988. So when you're growing up and you're born in 2000.
I wasn't even born. I don't think any right. of us were born.
I
wow.
wasn't born. I mean, crazy. It's true. I mean,
except for Jordan's old tail. Golly. Dang, who invited grandpa on this?
Bro, I had already hit puberty and everything. Are you kidding me? What?
I'm just saying it's hard to recruit in South Bend when you don't see the sun yes. for 6 months of the year. And like, Jordan, you can probably speak to that too. Cause you know, you went to Notre Dame and it's a cold place for a lot of the year. And, Notre Dame football's track record was not good for a good stretch of time. There were some pretty bad coaching hires. So Brian Kelly's really been able to turn all of that around, and make it a place where, you know, you're, you're probably not going to play if you're a freshman, which is not, it's kind of a turnoff if you're a, you know, stud high school player and you want to play. But Notre Dame's a hard school to get into. It's a hard school to go to, and it's hard to do exams and all of that BS that, you know, Notre Dame fans love to talk about, but it's kind of true. And Brian Kelly's turned a very, you know, legendary program into its former glory and putting it back in the conversation every year, even when Notre Dame's like, you know, whether undefeated, one loss, two loss, people still have to talk about Notre Dame. They don't like to, but they still have to. And that's all Notre Dame fans want to do, is annoy the crap out of everybody else and talk about how good we are. So props to Brian Kelly for all of
that. Check
that
box every year. Go ahead.
He has nailed it. Like, you cannot forget Notre Dame. If you want to talk about college football from 2010 to 2020 or whatever year it is now, you can't leave out Notre Dame. They're part of the conversation, and whether you like it or not.
That's true. I would agree.
Yeah, and you know, the one thing I wish we could do next podcast, if we're lucky enough to come on, we've talked about Rudy. We've talked about Ray McElroy's Bay story safety on Disney Plus, which is fantastic. But I really think we need the story of Jess Metana and sitting there at SO when she opened a paper and found out she was getting out of prison at Clemson. Oh. It was going to be able to go.
That's
to
not
Utopia
the same. She was going to
Nirvana,
prison, bro. Come
but
on.
She found out Nirvana was waiting for her in South
That's
Bend.
Not
I mean,
it.
What that moment
That's
was like it. For Jess has to be unforgettable. And I would love her to tell that.
You've seen Rudy. You saw the scene where he opens his acceptance letter and the music plays and he looks across the lake at the Golden Dome. I mean, it was pretty much that.
Yeah. Congratulations, Jess. Your life could have ended up like Kelly or Eric. So, I mean, it would have been awful.
We all ended up here, didn't we?
Yes.
That's right. We're all in the
same
place. All right. Let's finish with kind of a fun question here. I want to know from everybody, all four of us, give our answer here. Which player from Clemson or Notre Dame is going to surprise us? And even I'll take it a next step further to have the biggest impact of the game.
For me, I'm going to go offensively, and we haven't even mentioned this guy, but he's been somewhat quiet throughout the year. But I think with Trevor back, and if I'm not saying Etienne's going to rush for 100 yards even, guys, but if Etienne is back and can be more of a threat with Trevor in the RPO game, I'm going Braden Galloway, the tight end, who we've been wanting to see a lot more from this entire year. And I could see him breaking loose for a couple catches across the middle and making a big impact. So I'm going to go Braden Galloway. JC, what about you?
I was trying to go through all the targets that Notre Dame has, and there are so many of them.
They're all tight ends.
They're
and
all
running
tight
backs.
Ends. And it's a, let's be honest.
And it's a tight end I'm going to pick. I think Michael Mayer, I remember he had that drop, and he might have even had, did he have a fumble too? I know he had the drop.
A drop in the end zone maybe, and then like a false start or something.
It was a false start, and they had to settle for three instead of six. And yet he still had five receptions for like 60-something yards in that game. I think Michael Mayer, freshman out of Northern Kentucky. I grew up in Cincinnati. He's from right across the river. No, Cincinnati is not Kentucky. Let me repeat that. Cincinnati is not Kentucky, everybody. but Michael Mayer is a star. He's going to be a guy that plays at Notre Dame for three seasons, leaves early, and goes down as one of the more decorated tight ends in a school that churns him out, the factory you guys mentioned. I think Michael Mayer is going to have a massive game. Massive. I think he's going to have a couple touchdowns. He's going to have over 100 yards receiving in this game. I think Michael Mayer is going to really announce himself. That's the one I'm going for.
All right, Jess. Good luck following that.
I picked a little bit of a different like way to answer this question, which is that you asked like who will surprise us on Saturday. So I'm not going to pick Javon McKinley or Kyren Williams, because if they do something, you know, amazing, I'm not going to be surprised. So I'm going to name someone who I don't think this person was even available against Clemson, who is Braden Lindsey. He wears number zero. He's a wide receiver. He's very fast. And if he had a little bit of a hamstring issue, so he's been kind of iffy the last few games, but if he plays and he's full strength, he will make a play on Saturday.
I love that. And I think these have all been really good answers. I love that we have two tight ends, you know, answered right off the bat. I'm going to go the defensive side of the ball. I've talked about him, it seems like, all podcasts. I'm going Mike Jones. I think that he's going to be a guy, that equalizer type athlete that can hang in there with Ian Book, a guy that's going to get after the quarterback. He's going to be there for support. And he's probably matched up on Michael Mayer. So it's going to be a great game, guys. Thank you so much for joining us. This was so much fun, really different than we've ever done. And just appreciate y'all's time.
Well, the only reason I did it was because it's great to see Jess's face again, the rise she's had in this business, and KG as well, killing it on ACC Network, doing it all and killing it at the Roar. Emac, you had nothing to do.
That's right. I was going to say the same thing.
It was great to see you, Jordan. We need to catch up sometime and hang out with Shay and everyone else. You know, good job, whatever. Yeah.
Okay. All right, time to hang up. See you guys.
Yeah, we'll get rid of this Clemson Tiger ball and chain stuff, and we'll figure out some fun on the side. Absolutely, Jess.
That's right. Guys, that was awesome.
That was so much fun. We had so much fun on that podcast. I hope you guys did as well. We'll be back on Friday, where we'll really break down Clemson Notre Dame even more from an X's and O's perspective. And this podcast is produced by Richmond Weaver. We really needed him on this one. So shout out to Richmond for getting it done. Check out his podcast, Rich Take on Sports, wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening, guys. If you haven't already, go over to iTunes, subscribe to our podcast, drop us a 5-star rating. We would really appreciate it. But until next time, we'll see y'all.